From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Anthony Brooks, and this is On Point. The World Cup opened yesterday in Russia and gave the hometown crowd something to cheer about.
4-0 Russia lead. Golovin strikes! 5-0 Russia!
Russia scored on a free kick and beat Saudi Arabia 5-0 in the opening game. But the Americans are not competing because, well, they didn't qualify. The good news for them, the U.S., along with Mexico and Canada, won the bid to host the World Cup in 2026. This hour On Point, a look at the international football extravaganza as the World Cup kicks off. You can join us on air or online. Will you be watching the World Cup without a U.S. team? Who are you rooting for? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Saransk, Russia, is Tariq Panja. He's global sports reporter for the New York Times, who covers FIFA extensively and has been in Russia for the past week. His latest story is World Cup 2026, United States, Canada, and Mexico win the bid to host. And you can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. And Tariq, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you.
It's good to be with you, Anthony.
Give us a sense, first of all, of just the sheer sort of logistical challenge of this tournament, its size, and how it's spread out across Russia.
Absolutely. It's an enormous country. To be fair to the Russians, they've kept it, I would say, kind of limited to a point, to a degree. There isn't that much, or if anything, in the Far East, but still huge landmass. So I was at the airport this morning in Moscow, and the first week of the World Cup's really interesting because all the teams are still in it. So you've got all these fans of the 32 nations. And if you're at one of these sort of central airports, like one of the two in Moscow, the airport's a wonderful place because you see all these different colored shirts, languages, songs flying in all sorts of different directions. And that will be what it's like. Planes, trains, and automobiles, bleary-eyed fans, still enthusiastic, of course, for being at this fantastic tournament for the next week. Hours and hours of traveling to see 2 hours of action, hopefully see their teams win. And, of course, only one team will win in the end, and most people go home disappointed.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's listen to Russian President Vladimir Putin, who talked at the opening ceremony of the World Cup yesterday, focusing largely on the way soccer brings people together. He said he believes the sport has a power to unite the world. Here he is.
Our duty is to preserve this power, the unity for the generations to come, for the sake of developing sports and strengthening peace and mutual understanding between peoples. I wish all the teams success and an unforgettable experience to fans. Welcome to Russia.
Russian President Vladimir Putin speaking there through a translator at the opening ceremony of the World Cup yesterday. Tariq, I'm curious how Russia has prepared for this. At the Sochi Winter Olympics, we really got a sense of an event that was organized with sort of military precision, designed first and foremost to make a great impression on the world audience. How is Russia presenting itself in the World Cup?
So far, I'd say in a similar vein. All the stadiums are up and running. I haven't heard many complaints about infrastructure not working. There are security forces everywhere. So, for example, the walk to the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow, where the opening ceremony was, and the opening game, you would have to walk from the main train station. You would have row upon row of security personnel on each side, almost like a tunnel, sort of protecting the fans, or at least making them feel secure, if you like that sort of thing. I mean, some people think that these events have become too militarized. They're really, really visible. Of course, there is that threat to any major event, and Russia is no stranger to that. So I suppose they're taking all the precautions that they think they need to, but it's clearly visible. And it's, like I said, in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of signage, little things like that for people who obviously don't speak Russian, which is the majority of the fans coming here, all of that seems to have worked so far. I haven't heard any reports of any sort of chaos or disorder of any kind at the moment. They are really they've spent a lot of money on this,
yeah,
and they're determined to make it go off as successfully as possible. This is very important to Mr. Putin.
Tariq, as you've been going around, or I understand you're in Saransk, and we'll talk about that, but who are you seeing most? I mean, who has come to Russia to watch this event?
Right.
I assume probably not a lot of Americans, because the Americans aren't playing, but who are you seeing there?
Yeah. Ante, we can get into that in a sense, because America, you know, obviously is home to a multitude of people, particularly Latin Americans, et cetera, who have maybe their first or second teams here, whether they support the United States or have family members from elsewhere or are from elsewhere. I've seen that. I was on I met some Peruvians here who've come from Miami, some Colombians also from the United States, Iranian fans also from the States. So the U.S. are kind of here without having a soccer team here. But in terms of big numbers of fans, what I found quite interesting, certainly in central Moscow over the last few days, there is a huge number of South American soccer fans. Hmm. And in particular, what I'm interested in and what brought me to Saransk, the Peruvians, their country hasn't qualified for the World Cup or hadn't for 36 years until this edition. And it's been very, very painful. It's an absolutely soccer mad nation. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I was in Moscow. Just everywhere you look, you see these red and white shirts, absolutely everywhere, Peruvians. At the airport this morning, I was there from about 5:30. They were drinking beer and singing the songs, et cetera. My plane load of Peruvians who came here with me, they were in high spirits. It really has someone said to me, it's like the entire country of Peru is in Russia right now.
Fantastic. And of course, Peru, I mean, it's been difficult for Peru to qualify because, Argentina and Brazil are such powerhouses down in South America, right? That explains it, right?
Kind of, yeah. It's like the toughest neighborhood soccer-wise, I'd say. So in soccer, you qualify through your regional confederations, and that there are six in the world. And in that part of the world, there are only 10 teams going for 5.5 places. You think, 50% chance, it's not bad. The only problem is everyone's pretty good. Argentina and Brazil pretty much guaranteed to go. That leaves three, and it's been extremely difficult for Peru, as we've seen over the years. Compare that with Asia, where the quality of the teams, perhaps underlined by Saudi Arabia's pretty terrible performance yesterday in the opening game, kind of underlines the mix at this event. There's probably quite a few good teams who aren't here in order to get this global mix. FIFA's trying to change this.
Right,
the competition's going to expand to 48. Some people say that dilutes the quality, but for South American nations like Peru, and in this case we've got Chile, the reigning two-time champions of South America. They haven't made it through to the World Cup, which is quite amazing.
Really interesting. We're talking with Tariq Panja. He's global sports reporter for the New York Times. He's speaking with us from Russia about the kickoff of the 2018 World Cup. Let's go to David, who's calling from Charleston, South Carolina. David, you're on the air. Tell us what you're thinking about. Thanks for the call.
Hi, Anthony. I'm actually not going to watch, because I'll be honest with you, I think the organization has been so corrupt. I just don't believe the games are particularly legitimate. I used to love to watch. I used to go down to Costa Rica last time it was on, and I watched there, and it was a fantastic time. But I just don't feel it's a valid game anymore, to be quite honest.
And this is because of corruption over the years surrounding FIFA. Tariq Panja, talk to David about that. I mean, I know you're a great journalist. You're also a soccer fan. Do you agree, disagree with David?
It's interesting. David's point is one of is it a moral point, David? Is it about you think the games are fixed? You're just unhappy with the way the tournament was attributed to Russia and, say, Qatar or wherever else by FIFA? And of course, we saw those executives arrested in 2015. So what is the nature of it? It's not that you think the games are fixed, or is it that as well?
Are you still with us, David?
I don't necessarily. I am still with you, if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
I don't necessarily know whether or not the games are fixed, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they were. I think there's evidence in the past that the games have been fixed. And I'm certainly disillusioned by how these games are awarded to different countries. I mean, Qatar is a perfect example. I mean, it's, you know, what is it going to be, 124 degrees there when the games are on? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And then, of course, Russia, you know, I think that goes without saying. So I think there's a certain shadow on the whole affair for a lot of people. And it just makes it it's just not what it was back in the day.
Got it, David. Tariq, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd go with the attribution of the tournaments, the fact that we are here in Russia and we are going to Qatar in 2022. That was one of the most flawed and controversial bidding competitions for any sporting event in history, I'd say. You know, more than there's only one person left from that group who voted on the FIFA Council now.
So there's still a lot of soccer to appreciate, in other words. Tariq Panja, Global Sports Reporter for the New York Times, thank you so much for joining us from Russia today. We really appreciate it.
Happy to be with you.
We're talking about the World Cup, which kicked off yesterday in Russia. You can join the conversation. Which are your favorite teams? Who are you hating on? And what does the absence of a U.S. team say about the state of men's professional soccer in the U.S.? We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.
No fears, one flag, oh yeah. We've been waiting for this, oh yeah. We all at? We right here.
Ya empezó la rumba y estamos celebrando. Todo el mundo que me le mande la mano. Estamos vivos, hay que disfrutarlo. Hoy nadie me detiene porque yo no sé parar.
The news can feel like an echo chamber. You listen to podcasts to get that perspective shift. So travel with NPR's Rough Translation. Follow familiar conversations in unfamiliar parts of the world and get a new perspective on home. Rough Translation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the FIFA 2018 World Cup. You can join the conversation. Does it bother you that Russia, with all of its political, human rights, and doping scandal baggage, is hosting this tournament? Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And I'm pleased to welcome to this conversation from New York, Luis Miguel Echegaray. He's co-host of Sports Illustrated TV's Planet Football and the producer of Latino Spanish content at Sports Illustrated. And Luis Miguel, it's great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us from St. Louis is Roger Bennett. He's the co-host of the weekly podcast and TV show about international soccer called Men in Blazers. He's also co-author of the new book, Men in Blazers Present Encyclopedia Blazertanica, a suboptimal guide to soccer, America's Sport of the Future Since 1972. I love that title. It's great to have you, Roger Bennett. Thanks so much for joining us.
Honor to be with you, Anthony.
And in that title is a big subject that I want to get to with you a little bit later. But let me just start quickly and get comments from both of you. I'll start with you, Luis Miguel. What are you most excited about this 2018 World Cup in Russia? What are you hoping to see?
Well, Anthony, as you were discussing in the last few minutes, I need to let you know that I'm Peruvian.
Oh, all right. Big excitement for you then. Yeah.
Absolutely. Immediately, I'm going to obviously be biased here and tell you about that the long-suffering journey that's been the 36 years of not being at the Men's World Cup. Peru is finally back. So that, to me, is an ultimate highlight.
All right. And how do you like their chances?
Well, I have to answer that part heart, part mind. But I do think, though, that the group is a realistic option to get out of. France is obviously the clear leader when it comes to winning the group. But we have to remember and add a little context when it comes to Peru that, you know, Peru hasn't lost since November 2016. I think it has one of the most underrated coaches in the world of soccer in Ricardo Gareca. And as we have proven in the last few years, especially in the qualifiers, Peru can definitely cause some noise. So, you know, I see them being runner-up out of the group. And then after that, just sit back and hope.
All right. Roger Bennett, what about you? What are the highlights you're hoping to see in this World Cup?
Anthony, it's a World Cup. It's a bloody World Cup. It's a tournament that around the world creates the spine of people's lives, filling it with joyous collective memories against which, and this is true for me, against which I mark time, World Cup to World Cup. It's how I remember what happened to me in my life, stage by stage by stage. So Russia 2018 is just going to add more human moments, more feelings every game day. It's like a telenovela worth of narrative, watching heroes who were never known outside of arcane parts of the soccer world reveal themselves. You know, heels, wrestling heels become reviled all around the world. There's going to be just shared memories with friends, with families, with those that we love. And it's why, you know, the World Cup is so remarkable. It's not actually the best quality football in the world, club football, where the players have more familiarity with each other. These teams we're watching are essentially like Pro Bowl teams or the NBA All-Star teams are kind of flung together. But they allow dreams to be national collective dreams, Anthony, to be played out kind of safely yet passionately, not through war, but through sporting conflict.
Yeah, that's a nice way to describe
this tournament.
Absolutely. Roger, you know, we heard Luis Miguel talking about he's rooting for Peru. That's his heart talking. Do you have a favorite in this tournament?
America. Always America, even though we're not in it, Anthony. I still believe we
Well, how does that work, Roger, when we're not playing?
America's, we're going to get Zuckerberg on it. There's enough ingenuity in this country. How we can work it out. But barring that miracle, you've got 32 teams. One of them is England, so let's take them away because they are doomed to self-sabotage and fail. And you never know until these teams take the field with collective tenacity to work out who is going to be the team of destiny. I adore Iceland, I have to say. I was there 2 years ago to make a film about how this tiny island, there's a great piece in the New York Times today about them where they talk about the Iceland being smaller population-wise than Staten Island. It's about the same size as Corpus Christi, Texas. And they have worked out with intense investment in coaching, which the U.S. honestly can still learn from in an incredible way, how to create a tenacious footballing mentality, a breed of footballers who play.
Roger, I want you to stand by a second because we've got a caller, Sam.
Oh, my Lord, Anthony.
Sam is calling from Newton, Mass, and you might be surprised and as well as heartened to hear who he's rooting for. Sam, go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
Obviously, just as many other people, I'm very sorry that the U.S. is not competing this time. They would be my favorite, of course, living in the U.S., although I came from Mexico, but at the same time, my alliances are with the U.S. right now. But short of the U.S. not competing, I think my emotional favorite happens to be Iceland.
I
don't think...
What are the chances that I've got two guys on the air who are rooting for Iceland here in the U.S.? It's fantastic.
Keep listening, and you'll get more of us, actually, because they're a really big favorite, and they play with their heart, and they did fantastic in the last... tournament, and we hope that they advance. We don't give them more chance, but it's still going to be a fun tournament. Today, Egypt almost beat the Uruguay. They almost tied. They were 0-0 until the last moment. So the little guys have a chance.
All right, Sam. Well, thanks so much for that call. Luis Miguel and Roger, I want to talk to you a little bit about the news this week. As we've mentioned, the U.S. is not participating in this World Cup. But this week, the U.S. did make the tournament in 2026. They were awarded, along with Canada and Mexico, a sort of joint to be joint hosts of the World Cup in 2026. Luis Miguel Echegaray, let me come to you on that. How exciting is that, and what does it mean for U.S. soccer?
No, I mean, I echo Roger's excitement about the World Cup, but equally about the future and prospect of the game in this country. I think it's fantastic. I think it's not only going to elevate the popularity of the game, already soccer in terms of participation is the most played sport in this country, but given, you know, the abundance of, you know, selfishly speaking, the Hispanic and Latino communities, so many great things are happening when it comes to the popularity from the younger generations. So when you think about the 2026 World Cup in North America, Canada, Mexico, and the United States hosting most of the matches, it's a real great win. But I hope, aside from the infrastructure that it has and will be more built towards the tournament, it's also a great opportunity to expand the identity of soccer players in communities across the country, both from rural to underprivileged minority communities. So much talent exists in this country that's still yet unspoken for or undiscovered, and I think the 2026 World Cup is kind of a symbolic gesture of that. It's a way of thinking, this is our pot of gold, and now we have an opportunity in the United States to not only celebrate the game, but elevate it in terms of scouting and representing all the different colors and faces that this country has.
Roger Bennett, I want to ask you about this joint bid. So Canada, Mexico, and the USA will be hosting the 2026 World Cup. And it's interesting when you think about the political background right now, the tensions between the U.S. and Mexico, not to mention the tensions between the U.S. and Canada. My God, look at the way the G7 sort of collapsed at the end of this past week. And yet here these three nations are putting together a joint bid. They've been accepted. They're going to be hosts of the 2026 World Cup. What do you make of that?
Are you talking about the NAFTA World Cup?
Exactly.
It's remarkable. I mean, we're going to host the 2026 World Cup together with two of our sworn enemies, Mexico and Canada.
Build those walls, plural.
Please God, yeah. Please God, we won't be at war by then. But we should focus on the positive. I mean, Canadian football is a terrain where the game is always, even more so than America, been the sport of tomorrow. Mexico, so much we can learn from in the United States about their authentic and strategic footballing tradition. It will be an incredible celebration. USA is going to host 60 of the 80 games, including every game from the quarterfinals onwards. It's a historic moment for the different cultures of soccer in North America. It's going to do so much for the game here. You know, 1994 was the US World Cup, opened by Oprah and Diana Ross. And that burnt the hate that America had so long had for the sport. You know, the soccer all around the world, massive here, like space for Captain Kirk. It was soccer's final frontier. Coming back in 2026, I think it's America's 250th birthday will happen in the middle of that World Cup. It's going to be remarkable. We've joked in our book, and it made you laugh at the beginning. We always say soccer, America's sport of the future, as it has been since 1972, which is the subtitle of our book, Encyclopedia Blazertanica. But what you're going to see over the next 8 years is massive investment, massive commercial investment into youth development, into scouting, particularly in the Latino community where our best footballers are currently lying under-resourced within U.S. soccer. Huge investment into coaching that will transform the men's game in the United States and make it, please God, half as competitive as our women's team.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I wanted to read a tweet from Julie Childers, who tweeted to us, would love for you to specify this is the Men's World Cup, especially when reporting the U.S. didn't qualify. U.S. women team ranked number one in the world, and indeed they're the current champions, having beaten Japan in 2015, and in fact the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team is probably the most successful team in international soccer. They've won three World Cups. So it's important to mention that. But this brings me to one of the themes that I want to talk about. And I'll start with you, Luis Miguel. You know, Roger's the subtitle of Roger's book, A Suboptimal Guide to Soccer, America's Sport of the Future Since 1972. Why hasn't men's soccer been able to get it together in all these years and really become a force on the global scene?
First of all, great title. I could say it every day, and I would love to translate it in Spanish. I feel like it would even be better. but kudos to that. But no, I mean, listen, like, I think it's very difficult to create just a soundbite out of all the reasons why it's been slow here. But we also have to remember about the cultural history of this country in terms of sport, right? You know, the NFL still being the machine that it is, baseball, America's pastime, the NBA, et cetera, et cetera. Given the fact that that has already been the staple of American sports society, I mean, listen, I'm at Sports Illustrated. I love this place. But there's so many things that not just us, but everywhere we need to do in order to encourage and develop the game more. I think, though, that what's happening is the more diverse we're getting, the more global-minded we're getting, the soccer sport on this country is going to develop. And let's go back to the women's game. Women have always been the leaders when it comes to, you know, the talent and the quality and the way that they present themselves on the field and in tournaments. I mean, if I talk about other nations like or other continents or areas like South America that still needs to do a hell of a lot more to try and represent female soccer, at least here in this country, we've done a lot more to try and, you know, enhance and celebrate the fact that the women's team is someone to look up to. But I think that the more diverse we're getting, and just like Roger said earlier, in terms of putting more money into scouting and development, especially in diverse communities and rural communities, we're going to see this game elevate more and more and more. And people are beginning to understand, I think, that it's not just about, you know, the highlights perspective or, you know, soccer is a beautiful chess game that requires not just physical ability, but like tactical precision and vision. And I think that the more global we're getting inside this nation, no matter what anybody tells you, this game's going to get more popular.
Hmm. Roger Bennett, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I believe soccer is very much here. We only joke about it being the sport of the future. I've just released a podcast with WNYC Studios called American Fiasco, and I hate all of my work, Anthony. I'm very self-critical, but I'm incredibly proud of that.
Yeah.
Because WNYC have done an unbelievable job. It's a 12-part examination of 1994, when we had the World Cup here, into 1998, where the American team, I mean, being American, thought, you know what, we just showed the world we belonged. What are we going to do now? We're going to go and win the whole enchilada. And they marched to 1998 World Cup, and it was a march of doom. The podcast, it's like Apocalypse Now meets Scarface. It really is. It's such a human, remarkable drama. And I look back at those days. We made this show to look at really how fast U.S. soccer has come from those days, where the team weren't just trying to win games, but they knew every single game mattered because they were trying to grow the profile of the game. And they were fighting for their lives, for their careers, for a future, for this fledgling league, MLS, which started such a fragile bird in 1996. We're now living in an America so far away from that American fiasco time in that, you know,
so what happened, Roger? Explain that.
I can explain why if you want in a second, but you need to understand a Gallup poll just released last month asked Americans, what is your favorite sport? And under the age of 30, third biggest sport, soccer. 88,000 fans watch Mexico play in the United States, filling stadium after stadium after stadium. 72,000 fans regularly go and watch Atlanta play MLS games. Atlanta, you know, EA Sports, FIFA game is so massive here. It's the second biggest territory for the game that's become a gateway drug for young Americans to fall in love with the sport and learn the figures, learn the games, learn the teams, learn the characters. America, Anthony, is very much a soccer-loving nation. It's just been a slow and steady rise, World Cup to World Cup, rather than the overnight success it was always predicted as being. It's been a story of the tortoise rather than the hare.
Really interesting. Lots more to talk about here. We're talking about the World Cup. We're also talking about the extent to which soccer is loved and maybe where people aren't as passionate about it as they could be in this country. You can join the conversation. Are you excited that the U.S., Canada, and Mexico won the bid to host the tournament in 2026? Are you watching the World Cup 2018 in Russia right now? We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point. You reach that goal.
This is Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We do long-form interviews with the people behind the best books, pop culture, journalism, and more, so you can get to know the people whose work you love. You'll find Fresh Air on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Anthony Brooks. We're talking about the 2018 Men's World Cup. You can join the conversation. What does it say to you that the American men didn't qualify? If so many American kids play soccer, and they do, why can't we field a superstar team after all these years? And this week, despite the tensions with Mexico over immigration, the spat with Canada over trade, the continent was united when it got good news Wednesday in Moscow from FIFA President Gianni Infantino.
Canada, Mexico, and USA have been selected by the FIFA Congress to host the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
I'm talking with Luis Miguel Echagaray, the co-host of Sports Illustrated TV's Planet Football and producer of Latino-Spanish content at Sports Illustrated. Also with me, Roger Bennett, co-host of the Men in Blazers weekly podcast and TV show about international soccer, and host of the new podcast, American Fiasco, which tells the story of the epic fall of the U.S. men's soccer team in the 1998 World Cup. Before I go to callers, Roger Bennett, I want to come back to you because I want to know, I mean, I know you're an American citizen, but you were raised in Europe. I want to know what it is about American style of soccer and going back to the 1990s that you fell in love with. What did you like about the way they played?
Oh, I grew up in Liverpool. I've just become an American citizen 10 days ago. I want to make it clear.
Congratulations.
America has never lost a World Cup bid while I've been an American citizen. No connection, but I just want to tell the people. I grew up in Liverpool, you know, watching just John Hughes movies, every kind of sitcom, Charles in Charge, Miami Vice, Northern Exposure, dreaming of America. I came over here right after college, moved to Chicago, largely because of Pretty in Pink, movies like it. And I came just before the 94 World Cup. I'd watched England, a team that believed it was a big dog but plays like a small dog, like Charlie Brown constantly running at a football with Lucy Holding. They'd go into tournaments thinking they were going to win it all and then just self-sabotage and destroy the nation's hopes with just an apathetic play as if their jerseys weighed of chainmail when they pulled them on. And I watched this U.S. team. I'd never seen Americans play before, Anthony. 1994, wearing those stonewashed denim jerseys with their mullets and their ginger beards. They just swaggered onto the field with this air of self-confidence. They didn't belong on the field. They'd only qualified as hosts. And yet they just didn't know what they didn't know. And I loved the tenacity. I loved, like with Iceland, this collective team play and collective belief. And I also loved that they did something I'd never seen Englishmen do before. They actually played with joy and seemed to love the game. So for all of those reasons, I fell in love at first sight. And it's the story of my life to a large degree now, watching the sport I love, soccer, growing in the country that I love, America. And it's been a thrill over the past two decades to watch the infrastructure, the fan base. Right now I'm speaking to you from St. Louis, because Men in Blazers are touring the country every night during the World Cup. I'm about to get on a flight to Seattle and then go to Portland and San Francisco. And each of these cities, St. Louis, this incredible, authentic, passionate football culture. And to see the heartbeat of the game in this country is the honor of my lifetime. But the past 20 years, as I said earlier, slow and steady, America's become a true soccer nation.
All right. Well, let's take some calls. Let's go to Marcio, who's calling from Lynn, Massachusetts. Marcio, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Anthony. I am sad for the U.S. They haven't qualified for the World Cup. But I am very happy that Brazil is in there, and I am cheering with all my heart for Brazil, and it will be great to have the U.S. and Canada and Mexico hosting the World Cup in 2016, and I am looking forward to attend a Brazilian game in 2016 in the U.S.
All right, Marcio, thanks so much for the call. You're cheering from Brazil. May I assume that your home nation is Brazil? Marcio, are you still with us? Oh, Marcio, we lost Marcio, but I think he told the producer that he was originally from Brazil, so he's cheering for Brazil. Luis Miguel Echegaray, we heard Marcio there cheering for Brazil. Big powerhouse. Do you expect them to go far in this tournament?
Yeah, they're actually my tip to go all the way to the final. Brazil is, obviously we know about the five titles already won by the Selecao, and one of the things that's interesting about this specific squad is for many years, especially when Dunga was managing Brazil in the last World Cup, even when, you know, taking in mind they lost 7-1 against Germany in the semifinals, but even though it was a nice little build-up going up to that World Cup, the problem was that many Brazilians thought that the flair, the Joga Bonito style of Brazil had been lost, partly because Dunga himself was focusing way more on the defensive aspects of the team. But what's happened recently, especially leading up to Russia, is Coach Tite has created a team that's as creative as it is disciplined. This is a squad not just about Neymar, but it has, you know, many, many stars in every single position, from Coutinho to Marcelo to Roberto Firmino. Such a deep squad that I think is going to have a run. And with all due respect to the group that they're in, I think they'll ease into it. And really, the challenges will come in the knockout stages. But they're my tip to reach the final. Listen, I haven't done very well when it comes to my predictions this year, both in the Champions League and domestic soccer. But I still believe that I think Brazil has something special to offer.
Okay, let's go on to another call. Aliza is calling from North Canton, Ohio. Aliza, you're on the air. It's great to have you.
Hi, Anthony.
Hi. Tell me what's on your mind, Aliza.
So I'm definitely cheering for Brazil. That's my home country. I'm from São Paulo. And what surprised me this year is that I noticed on Facebook that a lot of my Brazilian friends are laughing about the World Cup. They're not really into it as they used to be, especially because of the politics and the issues that are very serious issues that are going on in Brazil now. So instead of paying attention to the World Cup, they're literally just saying, oh, there's a World Cup going on this year with all the issues we're having. You know, nobody's really as excited about it as we used to be.
Interesting, Aliza. I'm sorry to hear that. Let me come back to you, Luis Miguel. I mean, there's, of course, political corruption in Brazil, as there is in many parts of the world. But to what extent do sort of political situations have an effect on these tournaments? You know, and I'm thinking as the tournament gets underway in Russia, you know, there's great tension around the world involving Russia, including wars in Ukraine and Syria, the Olympic doping scandal, meddling in Western elections. I mean, does this affect tournaments in some way, or how do you put it in perspective?
I mean, it is a very good question, because you're never going to be able, like the caller said, you know, obviously there are, you know, political issues going on in Brazil, but like you said, not just Brazil. But here's the thing. I mean, I do a lot of community-based grassroots journalism when it comes to just talking to Latino fans and Hispanic fans in this country. And, you know, I live not too far away from, you know, a big Brazilian community. To be honest with you, it's an interesting one, because you don't have to alienate one to not like the other one. You can, you know, there's obviously a lot of value and necessity in criticizing what's going on in the nation, but the World Cup, in many ways, is something to at least forget about that and focus on a team that really brings so much joy, not just to Brazilians, but everybody else. I mean, I was in Jackson Heights a few weeks ago, and many Brazilians were telling me how excited they are about the World Cup and, you know, worrying about, you know, Neymar, their star's health, but I think everything is fine now. So it's a conversation that can be done on both sides. You can be, you know, thinking about the political situation, but at the same time, try and use the World Cup to at least help you cheer up about a beautiful country that is Brazil.
We're talking about the World Cup, the one going on now in Russia, the one that's going to be going on in North America in 2026, and the state of men's soccer right now in the U.S. Raj is calling from Westford, Massachusetts. Raj, it's good to have you on the air. Thank you. You go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Anthony. Thanks for taking my call. Huge soccer fan. Quick comment. I always root for a new World Cup winner. So this time I'm rooting for Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal. But regarding gaining more interest in the U.S., you know, how about FIFA realigning the qualifying groups and maybe putting Team USA in a group that is comprised of some Western European countries like England, Ireland, France, and imagine having qualifying games every 2 years between those nations and USA. In U.S.
And, Raj, that's a really interesting idea. Let me put that to Roger Bennett. What do you think there, Roger? Raj is talking about ways to increase American interest in soccer. What do you think about that idea?
American interest in soccer is huge. The Premier League is drawing incredible ratings. Liga MX has a massive, massive fan base. The Mexican League, Champions League is enormous here. The viewing ratings for the World Cup, I mean, Americans love more than any people I've ever lived with, cutting work en masse and daytime drinking. I mean, the challenge for the U.S. is to improve the quality of play of the actual men's players, the women, world beaters, and the men, a work in progress. Australia used to play in Asia. Australia used to play in Oceania, where they have to constantly qualify against the likes of Tasmania, and countries that never really challenged them. So when they did play elite teams, they always wilted. They moved to Asia voluntarily, a much harder place to qualify from because they wanted to become more battle-hardened. And the U.S. qualified through CONCACAF, this bizarrely named Star Wars cantina of North and Central American teams, Mexico, our fiercest rival, and superior, all the way down to the likes of Antigua and Barbuda. It's an intricate challenge. It's an odd challenge from a footballing perspective, playing against European teams. Jurgen Klinsmann, funnily enough, the old quite controversial U.S. manager, he always used to say he'd like the U.S. to have to qualify out of South America, which would be so much harder, playing the Brazils, the Argentinians, the Uruguays, and the like. But in the long term, it would battle harder than this U.S. team, and make them more prepared come tournament time. But ultimately, we've got to bloody qualify first.
Right. Well, let me ask you about...
We'll see.
Roger, you put your finger on a point that I want to come back to. We talked about the dominance of women's soccer, American women's soccer. I'll put this question to you, Luis Miguel. I mean, Roger talked about the need to improve the quality of the men's game. Earlier in the hour, you talked about it's just going to take time to develop this, but why have the women been able to do it and not the men? I mean, is there something about the pipeline of talent that the men's soccer could learn from, or what's going on here?
Well, I think that when it comes to the women's game, you have to remember that, first of all, the level of development in terms of how the progress goes from, you know, playing collegiate soccer to eventually making the national team is almost, you know, the prerequisite when it comes to, you know, developing female soccer. And let's remember something. They're not necessarily, I mean, burdened is the wrong word, but they're not necessarily poisoned with everything else that comes with trying to, you know, fight against, you know, European club soccer development and international game. The problem is that one of the biggest issues, I think, is that, I mean, and listen, like, there's still problems with the women's game. I still want to see more minorities, you know, represented in higher levels, especially in the first team. So, you know, there's still things to do. But when it comes to U.S. men's soccer, and you try and compare it to everybody else, it's going to be a very complex, different situation, because ultimately what you have to think about is how is our domestic soccer happening here? What's happening in terms of the difference between, you know, collegiate soccer, which basically doesn't exist in Europe, mm-hmm. right, as opposed to academy development, and also the competition between La Liga, the Premier League, where these players play day in and day out, and also MLS, which is a fantastic league. I'm a big fan, but it's still growing and trying to gain popularity as opposed to, you know, the other league. So that there's so many different situations that you have to, so many routes that you have to try and solve. Having said all that, I think that we're heading in the right direction, but we still need to excavate and dig deep into this beautiful country and everything that it has to offer. Only then will you be able to really discover the true triumph that exists.
Interesting. Roger Bennett, our time grows short, so this is kind of the last question, but give us a final thought as we think about the World Cup in Russia. What should we be looking for?
What I was going to say about a final thought would be, it's the best of times, the worst of times for American soccer right now. The 2026 World Cup award is going to transform the game. It's like rocket fuel for the game in America. At the same time, the U.S. not being in the World Cup is devastating for the players, for the fans, for everyone who cares about the game and over the next 31 days. Having said that, in American Fiasco, the podcast series about the 98 disastrous World Cup by the U.S. men, every single interview I did with one of the players from that time all ended with the same thought. They all said, we destroyed the game. We felt like we'd ended soccer in America by being beaten by Iran, humiliating the American nation. But a year later, 1999, our women, they won the World Cup. They got the Wheaties boxes. They made America love the sport again. Let's hope history repeats itself. It's a women's World
Cup.
In 2019, let the women redeem the men again, Anthony.
All right. Great final thought there. American soccer rocket fuel coming from the women and possibly for the men in 2026. Roger Bennett, co-host of the Men in Blazers Weekly podcast, thank you so much for joining us today. It was such a pleasure having you.
Courage.
And Luis Miguel Echegaray, co-host of Sports Illustrated TV's Planet Football, thank you.
Thank you. You said my name beautifully.
I appreciate that. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is On Point.